Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is actor, writer, stand-up comedian, Autumn Chiklis, and we're talking about her novel, Smothered. Sometimes entering the real world means moving in with your mother. Autumn, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
It is so great talking to you. Thank you for having me.
I had a tremendous amount of fun reading this book. And,
oh, great.
I know, but it was also really scary.
Because
I had one of those mothers that was sort of an East Coast version of this.
Well, if there was an East Coast version of that, then no one would survive it.
No, she definitely wasn't as upper class, but she was as that overbearing and scary. I want to talk to you. Is this your first novel?
This is my debut.
Oh, my God. Have you written before, like smaller pieces?
Yes, I have. It's actually funny. This has kind of been my writing coming out party, where I've been writing my whole life very much in secret. It's something that was always near and dear to my heart. It's the thing that I did when I wanted to relax. But I would never let anyone read anything that I ever wrote, other than, essays and things like that for school. But all my creative writing I kept very personal, because it's an intimate thing when you write.
It is. Yeah, you're putting a lot out there.
Yeah, especially since it's very tightly based on my real life, as I like to joke. But it's...
I was hoping it wasn't.
No, it actually really isn't. It's very loose. My mom...
Very politic of you to say so.
No, it's funny. I'll let you in on this little kind of snippet in my life. I moved home after college, and my mom came into my room the first day because I'd already gotten the book deal right out of college, and she said, "What can I do to help you?" And I jokingly said, "Just be yourself." And she told me, "Listen, I don't want you to spare me. Make me look as wild and ridiculous. Make this as funny as you can. Do not think that I'm going to take it personally." So, no, most of this did not happen. It's just that my mom has an amazing sense of humor and is told me to lay it all out there.
Well, we'll talk about the characters in just a bit, but I want to talk about writing your first novel is really a scary thing, putting it out there. But you studied theater and screenwriting at the University of Southern California. I have to believe that helped you in writing this novel.
Absolutely. So what I was about to say, once we kind of got off on that little tangent about whether or not my mom is really this crazy, I was lucky that I had been writing spec scripts. I have been a storyteller my whole life. I've been acting since I was 7 and going to theater school and film school and just reading different kinds of scripts and plays and, some of the greatest writers throughout the history of the theatrical and cinematic arts. I was able to absorb a lot of different storytelling methods, and the way I kind of wrote the book is very cinematic in nature, where it's a lot of visuals and it's text and emails and Instagram posts. So going to a screenwriting class, many screenwriting classes, definitely helped me. This is just the first fiction of my own, not a spec script, not a assignment that anyone's gotten to read. And that's been very nerve-wracking, but also really exhilarating.
And having read it, to me, it seems screen ready as something that's waiting to be optioned.
Thank you. Actually, I can tell you it has been optioned.
I knew it.
It has been optioned for a television series, which is something that I'm really, really excited about. I mean, since I started writing this book, my mom would come into my room and say, "Who's going to play me? Michelle Pfeiffer or Reese Witherspoon?"
Oh, my God. How about who's going to play you?
Oh, goodness, who is going to play me? I would love the opportunity if they would like it, but if I had to choose someone, we'll see if, Jennifer Lawrence is free to do it.
Now, the basic premise of this, and I love this, is the main character, Eloise Laurent Hansen. She graduates from Columbia, okay, and basically, what did she major in?
She was a double major in philosophy and art history.
So she's guaranteed no employment.
So no job prospects at all.
So she's forced to move back in with her parents. Now, this is a common phenomenon that's happening. Now, I'm old enough that when I went to school, the idea of moving back into your parents' house after graduating college was anathema.
That's what I hear.
Oh, my God. You never did that. I'm holding my finger and thumb in front of my forehead right now. You would be a huge loser if you did that.
Yeah, I know.
And now it's so common.
There was a study in 2016. I think it was 32% of 18 to 34-year-olds had moved back in with their parents, which is a crazy number when you think about just the 18 to 34. That it used to be a stereotype. You were a bum if you moved back in with it. Like, he still lives with his mom. But now we all kind of still live with our mom. And there are a lot of reasons for that. That, you know, changing economy and job market, the housing market. Our moms are cooler now, maybe. At least mine is. Maybe.
I love the mother in this book, because she's a... she's a phenomena. If I was to ask you to describe the mother, Mother Hansen, in this book, how would you describe her in a couple of sentences?
Oh, goodness. So we've all heard the term helicopter mom.
She's a fleet of helicopters.
This is Shelly. I call her a party chopper with neon searchlights. She is all over her daughter 24 hours of the day. It's a bit of a flipped relationship where, you know, most mothers are nagging their daughters about curfew and, you know, make sure that you're getting straight A's. This mom wants her to be going out more and to be more social and says things like she needs diploma. So I would say that it's kind of this reverse relationship where you have this, 22-year-old who's going out into the world after studying. She's a great liberal arts education. She's very driven, very ambitious, has no idea what she wants to do with it. And then you have this woman, this mother, who is larger than life and believes in having fun and being present and wearing outrageous clothes and flirting with all of the boys. And so you have these kind of polar opposite personalities stuck in a home together.
There's a lot of lists in this book. And Eloise, she actually makes a list of like how she's going to do this before she moves back in. She actually makes this list like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this. The graduation goals list, the rules and expectations for the parents now that I'm moving back home as a fully realized and capable adult. As soon as I read that, I thought to myself, anybody that writes that I'm moving back home as a fully realized and capable adult, that's a red flag, because you're not.
And I wanted to.
And she has to scratch off every one of these through the course of the book.
Oh yeah, no, none. It's absolutely none of them work out, because the truth is, when we graduate, and it's one of the reasons a lot of us are moving back home, we want to be these adults. We want, you know, we want our 9-to-5 job and a townhouse and a power bob. But the truth is, we're still children, and we have no idea what we're doing. And I don't know if that changes. So a lot of people have told me that no one ever knows what they're doing, and that terrifies me. But I really wanted to kind of make fun of or poke fun of this idea that, you know, you graduate college, you get straight A's, and boom, A-plus life. You know exactly what is going to be thrown at you, and you don't. And so I love just making fun of that.
Well, on the other hand, Eloise, mm-hmm. This is a quote from your book on page 26. All I want is a career that I am passionate about, now so far so good, and will never get tired of, which provides a stable income for me and my future family, is important to the human race, and will one day get me an NPR segment or 60-minute special. Is that too much to ask?
Oh, goodness. So
yeah.
I know a lot of these people.
I know a lot of those people, too.
Yeah, like I said, I love poking fun at it, where it's not that her heart's in the right place, her mind's in the right place. But as a millennial, we're kind of in this crisis of identity where we're told that the main goal in life is happiness and fulfillment. No matter what you do, be happy and fulfilled, and then post it all over Instagram so everyone can see how happy and fulfilled you are. And I just wanted to kind of explore a character who has no path and has done everything technically right and is like, all right, now where's my 60-minute special? Don't know what I'm going to be talking about, but I did it. I graduated with honors, and I didn't smoke weed in college, and, you know, I was a good girl, so where's my...
Should have smoked that
where's
weed.
Where's my stuff? it's like, she probably should have. She needed it. Mom would have told her she needed it.
She's a SUNY cum laude, right?
SUNY cum laude, yes. SUNY cum laude, which, by the way, there's a picture in the book that says congrats to our SUNY, and that is a picture I had to take, which means for my mom's birthday that year, we had to make her cake say congrats to our SUNY. The cake makers were very confused.
Now, the counterpart to your to the mother of Lou is Lou's father, who's a really interesting figure, who's not in your face all the time throughout the course of the novel. And I found him really, really interesting because he was the steadying the force of reason.
Yeah.
if there could be such a thing as a force of reason in this book, describe the father in the book.
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of hit the nail on the head, and I'm glad you picked up on that. He's very much the salt of the earth. He's a self-made man. He's in a lot of ways the same as Lou, and in a lot of ways kind of the polar opposite, where he is the definition of a, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. He had his own oil-changing business at, like, 10, and he is, I like to say, the Ricky to Shelley's Lucille Ball, where she's very high in the sky and he, you know, rolls his eyes but loves her anyway.
Lucy.
Wanted a character that kind of pointed out all of the ridiculousness going on around them. And I wanted someone who could call Lou out when she goes, you know, I'm an adult. And there's a section in it where he goes, no, you're not.
Right.
Why? Because you're 22? You're not an adult. You don't, you know, you're living at home with your parents and you don't have a job. Get a job and then you can complain to me.
So I
did want that voice of reason in there.
This is very much a novel of a comedy of manners. It reminded me of a Jane Austen novel written today, like with juice cleanses and pugs, like really pampered pugs. But it has that kind of
bio to that on Twitter, like the Jane Austen with juice cleanses and pugs of the millennial.
But it has the attention. Talk to me about paying attention to detail throughout the novel, because that is what makes this novel swing. Your sense of place and sense of detail. Talk to me about how important that was in sketching that out.
Sure. I'm an Angeleno. I grew up in Los Angeles, and it's an extraordinary and delicious place to for a story to take place, because it's a character within itself. It is a series of dichotomies, and I love satirizing this place. I do, because it, on the one hand, is extravagant, and everyone is drinking algae shots with mushroom powder to make their skin tighter. And yet you'll meet some of the most substantive, incredible people you've ever met. So I love, when it comes to the details of this book, I really wanted to write something that if I were reading it, I would call my mom and say, Mom, you have to read this because this is you. Or, yeah, like, at one point I was very concerned that it was going to be a little too niche. Like, what if people don't know what algae shots are?
Well, I'll tell you, as a New Englander and a lifelong New Englander, it was at times like I was reading a novel about, like, Star Trek, about an alien civilization. But that just made it more exotic and fun. I mean, it was like, there really is a place like this where people
Yes, people do, you know, and I love making fun of it because it's extraordinary.
It is extraordinary. It's bizarre.
And my dad's a New Englander as well. He's from Boston.
That's right.
Proud Bostonian. And
how does he deal? Wait a minute. As a proud Bostonian, how does he deal with this? How does he think about SoCal culture?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I make a lot of fun of it and satirize the most extravagant and extreme parts of it. But the truth of the matter is, Los Angeles is a really amazing place. He loves California because there's a way to stay away from all that.
Right.
You don't have to be taking algae shots. It's not like a requirement to get your California license.
Okay.
They're not like you're
good to know.
Famous.
Good to know, Autumn. Good to know.
Yes. And he very much, he's stayed a very grounded person and he's very connected to his roots. So it was important to him to raise daughters who were involved in that kind of world. And,
nice.
You know, we have incredibly down to earth friends, and I think that a lot of it is the way you're raised and the people that you're surrounded by, like any culture. And I also think that, you know, if you isolate any culture and tell someone across the country about it, you're going to find things that anyone finds extraordinary.
I don't know. When you talk about Massachusetts, there's no counterpart. It would be like Howard Johnson's vanilla ice cream. I don't know. I have no idea. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is actor, writer, and stand-up comedian. Was that right?
Yes.
We'll talk about that in a bit. Autumn Chiklis. We're talking about her new novel, her first, Smothered. Sometimes entering the real world means moving in with your mother. Oh, my God. Now, we talked about Eloise, and we talked about her mother and father. the big monkey wrench in this whole scene is that she has a boyfriend from mm-hmm. the East Coast, Theo. Talk to me about Theo. Theo seems totally grounded. He's a bit of a hipster, but he's okay. He's totally grounded. But her parents
totally grounded.
But her parents have no idea.
Yes. I have a boyfriend. He is incredible and has an amazing sense of humor as well.
Are you talking about your real boyfriend or your made believe?
My real boyfriend. My real boyfriend has an incredible sense of humor, and I have nods to him throughout this. But the reason, oh yes. The more you know how much of this book is true, the more it'll make you laugh. The person I was the most nervous to read it was his mother because, thought things I don't want to give away. Spoiler alert. But, I can say that she read it and she loved it. So, whew. The Theo device for me, or the character for me, was I wanted to give someone in Lou's life that really grounded her, that wasn't just her father. Someone who was kind of a counterpoint in her life, who's working really hard and knows exactly what path he's on, has a passion, has a dream, and is already working towards it. So it's another person to kind of compare herself to, another person who she's worried she isn't enough for.
That's right.
And it also is just a great source of conflict. I mean, I'm a sucker. I'm a romantic. And I always love a story about two people who want to be together, and there being a main obstacle. It's just in this obstacle, it happens to be her mother.
Actually,
which, you know what? I guess is very Jane Austen-esque.
It really is. It really is. Now there's a host of other characters, and we can't talk about them all. But I want to talk about one that I became really fascinated by, and actually sort of wanted to now read a novel all about her, Natasha McPatterson.
Ah, yes, Natasha.
I want to read more about her.
I'm glad. Natasha was a character who I actually kind of fell in love with because in ways she's so awful in ways. She's that kind of person. It's another person that I've known, not a specific person, but kind of an amalgamation of a lot of different people who, that millennial type that's like, I'm going to own a van and I'm going to drive the country and I'm going to move, go to India and, you know, get all of the piercings and all the tattoos and then somehow settle down at 30. It's weird how that happens. But I wanted a character who really was like pushing the farce and who was a foil for Lou and someone who we know is her best friend in college who ends up going on this wild side B-plot journey. That I have a whole backstory for her. I could write a whole book about Natasha.
Oh man,
what
do it.
Happens to her.
Do it. I love her story. I don't want it. We're not going to give it away. Okay, on the air. But I love what happens to her in this book, especially the ending. I think it's perfect, and it's I want to know Natasha when she's like 30 and 40 because it would be incredible. Now
I know.
I can just imagine where she's going to go. I know people like Natasha.
I think we all know a Natasha.
That's
the point. We all know someone.
Now, to give the audience a flavor of the writing, there's a great list you have. There's a party. It's a July 4th party, right? And and poor Lou has to go to the shopping for the party. Now, imagine this is a classic SoCal gala. And read to me
Sorry, you cut out for a second. Read to you the what?
The list.
Yes. Would you like me to start? Do you have it in front of you by any chance?
You can just start it wherever you want.
Okay. So I'll start from here. Mom bought these gorgeous red, white, and blue centerpieces, as well as recyclable plates and utensils, cute little mason jars for drinking glasses, and long-lasting multicolor sparklers for the guests. She also got twinkle lights to hang above the porch, brand new white tablecloths with silver runners and candles, a giant pool swan for no apparent reason, and an American flag scarf to wear for the occasion. She also purchased Patriot-themed dog collars that play the national anthem whenever the pugs shake their heads. Meanwhile, I went to the grocery store for all of the necessities. Burgers, turkey burgers, veggie burgers, hot dogs, kosher dogs, vegan dogs, buns, gluten-free buns, flaxseed buns, cheese, vegan cheese, condiments, sugar-free condiments, chips, baked chips, gluten-free baked chips, unsalted chips, soda, diet soda, all natural sugarcane soda, sparkling water with hints of fruit to make it taste like soda, and salads. Oh, and 10 bottles of rosé. In preparation for Lisa's twins, I bought 2 Nerf gun blasters and a first aid kit in case they all try to bring their BB guns again. Imagine the swagging 6 will probably spend their entire party on their cell phones, so I bought little party hats and cutout signs for potential Instagram pictures. I even bought a new Captain America shirt for myself and a giant cutout of Lady Liberty wearing sunglasses. There is nothing we are not prepared for.
And she ends up not being able to wear the Captain America shirt, right?
Oh, no. Mom will never let that. This is not Comic-Con.
That whole idea that would be the list that you would have to go to just have a frickin' party is
well,
like,
that is a real thing in California.
I know that. Oh, my God. I know that, Autumn, and that scares me.
It's like, you're like, all right, we have a gluten-free person. We have a cis person. We have a paleo person. All right, what can we eat that has all these things and does not taste absolutely terrible?
Oh, my God. And there's so much stuff in there that I wanted to know if it's a real thing. Like the cucumber and gin, is that really a drink?
Oh, the Sheltini, the cucumber and gin martini. Yeah, my mom loves martinis. She's a big martini gal.
Okay.
And we actually, she always loves, she loves cucumber in it or mint in it, anything refreshing and, you know, full of agave syrup. So I gave her a signature drink, which is really refreshing. Actually, there was a blogger, her name is Tori, it's on my Instagram somewhere, who made a Sheltini and posted it with the book, which is really cool. So there's a Sheltini recipe if you would like it.
I'm more of a Scotch guy, just straight up.
Single malt.
No. There's so many funny parts of this. There's a great part on page 107 where you do some drunk texting. And what I wanted to do, are you on page 107? I'm springing this on you, Autumn. I want you to read that.
Is sabotage.
I know.
What you're doing right now. That's okay.
I love drunk texting. I just had to do this to you.
Do you love drunk texting yourself, or do you love making other people read their drunk text?
The latter.
Okay. Yes. I can give some context.
Go do it your best. Do it your best.
Thank you. I'll give it my all world shot. I'll give some context, which is this is the end of that party, that same party that she says nothing could possibly go wrong. As you can imagine, everything goes wrong. So at the end of it, this is the condition she is in. This was a great party. This general is so tight. There's so much alcohol in the cabinet. Yep. I should probably go to sleep because I'm tired. Happy 4th of July, bitches. Lots of heart emojis.
I'm sorry to spring there, but that was great. That was good radio right there. Now, as a writer, I want to ask you a couple of things. Are there certain times of the day that you like to write?
Yeah, I'm a morning writer for sure.
Like like early morning or just like middle classic center of the morning?
I like to start by like 9:30.
Okay.
Some people would consider that very early. Some people would consider that basically noon. For me, I think it's smack in the middle. I like to wake up, work out, have my coffee, and then I have like a whole ritual. I have twinkle lights that I turn on.
That's what I thought. A lot of writers they all have their rituals that they have to do. So tell me about them.
Yes.
You turn on twinkle lights.
I do. I used to. It was because in my childhood bedroom that I was writing in, I would have these twinkle lights over my desk.
Yep.
And so it just kind of turned into a fun thing. And I also have they're like saint candles, but instead of saints, it's Shakespeare and Virginia Woolf. So I light my Shakespeare and Virginia Woolf candles. And I sit down with my cup of coffee and I write.
Do you give yourself a goal to like do X number of pages every day, or is it just how much you feel like you get done?
Well, with this, I did have a deadline, so I had a very strict schedule that did not work.
Did you like writing to deadline?
I did. There's something really nice, especially as someone, there's a little bit of Lou in me. I like to think not too much, but there is a little bit of Lou in me, and that's the part that craves structure and a detailed syllabus. And to have someone say, hey, this is the time you need to have this book done, you have 1 year, or even less than a year, actually, it really forced me to step up on my game and be, you know, who knows how long it would have taken me if I felt like I had my whole life to write my novel. So I really like having a deadline. It works for me.
Now that you've gotten one novel done, can you see yourself in the future now continue to write fiction?
Absolutely. I'm so in love with it. It was definitely the most challenging experience I've ever encountered. But it was also by far the most rewarding. And the book's a national bestseller now, which is the most exciting news I could possibly share. I feel very, very fortunate. But I also fell in love with the process of sitting down with my computer. And some days it would be absolute nonsense and I would hate everything. I deleted 30 pages in the middle of it.
Oh, wow.
And 30 pages on Microsoft Word is a lot more pages in an actual life.
It is.
A third of the book, I just like.
And it never came back in any other form?
No, there are lines I stole. There were like jokes in it that I pulled. But for the most part, that whole storyline just went away. And you come to walls and frustrated moments.
Right, yeah,
as a writer.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But when you break through them, and the fact that I am holding a book right now that has my name on it, and
it's got to be an amazing feeling.
Yeah, it's unparalleled to anything I've ever experienced. So I absolutely hope to do it again and again and again and again until, I guess, by the time I'm 80, there probably won't be keyboards anymore. I'll just be like typing it out with my eyeballs. But you know, until words evade me, I hope to keep writing them.
We're completely out of time, and there's so much more I could talk to you about, especially there's several sections in this book that are just amazing. There's a cleanse diary that I strongly recommend everybody read. And that's like a performance piece in and of itself.
I should do it as a one-man show.
You really should. I think that would be a perfect piece.
It's like a dance, and now a juice cleanse. Snap, snap, snap.
My guest tonight has been actor, writer, stand-up comedian Autumn Chiklis. And we've been talking about her new novel. It's a lot of fun. It's really interesting. Smothered. And it's actually, that S is just sort of added in there, sort of wedged in there. Smothered. Sometimes entering the real world means moving in with your mother. Oh, shivers go up my spine. Autumn, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Mark. This has been so fun.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.